Welcome to Black Hollywood Live on Joking the Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Excuse me. Today, SpaceX launches a rocket and lands a rocket. Uber CEO calls for an investigation, and the Jetsons car is coming to life. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live, Geek Nerd Tech.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. Most Def and Nate Dogg, the late great Nate Dogg. Wow, nice choice. You picked this one?
And Pharrell Munch. I mean, I picked most of them, bro.
You picked all of them.
What do you mean? Who else picks them?
I missed the exchange where you picked this one. I'm like, Marissa, coming out, right, dating the crates with some Pharrell Munch. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by the man you just heard, Akili Shine. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Everything is well, man. It's a lot of great stuff happening in the world of technology, in the world of popular culture. So things are well, man. What about yourself?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there. I've just been sort of busy and running all over the place, but not blind to all the things that have been happening in pop culture and tech and politics as well. So I wanted to talk about, well, the first thing is we have the Oscars coming up this week, so... you know, well, maybe we'll be able to talk a little bit more about that after the fact. But you know, as we go towards the Oscars, you have any predictions? Any thoughts?
No, I have no predictions. I mean, I have hopes. I think we discussed this before. I mean, it's a great year for, you know, how black folks are represented, mm-hmm, in film. We have a strong, diverse outpouring of just great filmmaking, from the documentary space all the way to, you know, traditional narrative filmmaking. And I think that to have one or two win, that would be awesome. So yeah. I'm just looking forward to see, you know, what happens. But I'm glad that, you know, we've gotten on the main stage this year. You know, last year it was a drought, so I'm happy to see that, you know, we have a little bit more saturation.
Yeah,
so
we have three shots to in the Best Picture category. You know, with Hidden Figures, Fences, and Moonlight.
Right.
I mean, do you think it will take out La La Land?
I mean, if I were voting, I would say absolutely yes. I have La La Land. I just watched it a couple of days ago. Like, I don't think that's better than Fences. I don't think that's better than Hidden Figures.
What do you mean?
Right. Okay.
City of Stars.
I mean, I'm not saying that it's not a good film.
Yeah, sure.
I'm just saying that I think that they're in the category of Best Picture. I think that Fences and definitely Hidden Figures take the cake. So.
Yeah, I talked about this last time we were on Hidden Figures. Really blew me away in terms of just being a great all-around movie. That was fantastic. Last thing, I'm reminded of when Aziz Ansari was on SNL. They did a whole skit about him not loving Moonlight and getting interrogated by cops. It was really, really funny. I don't know if you've seen that one, but check that out. Anyway, here we go. We'll start off where politics and technology intersect. Our president, the president of the United States, we should say, Donald J. Trump, is under fire. Shocker. This time is for his use of his broke-ass, insecure Android phone. Now, I remember there was a big kerfuffle when Obama was really, like, not wanting to give up, you know, his phone. He loved it so much, and they, you know, Secret Service made him do it and change and get him on a secure phone. Trump is just like, on the Android, out at Mar-a-Lago, just tweeting away, doing all kind of stuff, like, unsecure as all hell. So Congressman called an investigation into this phone. I mean, this is not necessarily a shot at the Android folks, but, like, I mean, I don't know. What do you think of this?
I mean, I think, you know, we've, you know, in the last few presidencies, we've entered into the age of mobile communication, so this will always be a problem with, you know, our commander-in-chief and keeping things that are supposed to be secured. And so,
right,
I think that, you know, I mean, there is a transitional period where each president has to go through. Like you just mentioned, Obama was very much so attached to his BlackBerry.
Yep.
And I mean, it took him a minute to adopt and move over, I think, to an iPhone. But I think Trump will eventually do it. I mean, they already say he's not really big on email. He's more of, like you said, he has, you know, Twitter fingers. But I think the concern is that someone could hack into his phone and download or put out some malware that will be able to lock on to other things that are within the White House. And that's the concern, that they'll be able to siphon maybe from someone else's phone or someone else's laptop because of his, you know, disregard to not give up this phone.
So. Yeah, it's... I mean, whatever, I won't get into it, but the thing that just strikes me, is just makes me insane, fills me with rage, is all of the things that were brought up about Hillary Clinton and the email server. The whole thing with the email server is that, like, she's being careless and with secrets and, right, and classified information, how careless she's being, how she's not fit because she's so careless, and the emails, what she's hiding. And this dude is at Mar-a-Lago, like, with laptops open, looking at documents with cell phone lights and on plain view, like, talking to golfers. He's got the Android phone. It's like, he's the president. Like, this is serious. I can't... anyway, it's a big deal. We get the idea. Moving on. SpaceX launched a rocket and landed a rocket. And, yeah. I got an alert, like, hit us both up separately to say, check it out. And then they aborted the launch, because the window's so small, and then they were able to launch it again. And, it was pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I think it was phenomenal. I mean, the most crazy part to me was just how it comes back into the atmosphere and lands. Like, typically, you know, with the space program, NASA, you know, it's going to land in the ocean, or it's going to land like a typical airplane. But this thing is, like, literally landing vertically, you know, and I think that is pretty phenomenal to shoot something up into space, and then to be able to have the mathematics and be able to have the exactitude to have it come right exactly where you need it and safely land. I think that's. I mean, clearly, this is preparing us to colonize other planets and moons. So, I think this is a huge step for that process to begin. You know what I'm saying?
So. I agree, and it's so amazing that they have the technology to be able to. It's one thing to be able to launch it and land, but they're able to launch it and land and then relaunch it, you know, presumably back to Earth. I imagine at some point that's the trick. But I guess the step one. It's really cool. It reminds you of like what you would see in the old 50s and 60s rocket ships, where they would land vertically, and they would be like, "That's ridiculous, that'll never happen." Hey. And then here we are, like this giant rocket is landing. I agree with you. I think it's cool.
And watching the video, I mean, it just makes you feel like a kid, in the sense that, you know, you hear in the background. I mean, you don't know who's really in the background, but you hear a lot of noise in the background, cheers and just you know, exaltations of joy, right, because with each phase of it happening. So, like, the rocket boosters would come, like, step one, we did it. Another phase will happen. I mean, I think that's awesome, because, I mean, so, millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, are invested to make this happen.
Absolutely.
And each level, you know, has its intrinsic risks. And
the entire teams that work on
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And to have each one pass, you know,
right.
I think that's awesome.
To have those people work together. And, if you're the team that, like, just making sure you leave the atmosphere, making sure that Booster 1 fires, that's a huge deal. And it kind of reminds me of what they... fictionalize in the book and the movie and The Martian, sort of that all the sort of people working problems, solving problems, and working together to make stuff happen. Donald Glover's character and all this stuff. I thought that was really, really cool. I agree with you. Like, it's good to see.
Absolutely.
And I add one more thing. This is kind of just reminds you of like what was so exciting about the space program in the 60s. All through the 60s and then in the 70s a little bit, and then again back in the 80s with the space shuttle program. It's like we were all excited about, you know, there was something we'd all gather on TV and check out and launch.
It's
a moment, and people were genuinely excited and about all that stuff. So, I don't know. I think that it's very cool. Moving on. Speaking of still SpaceX, your boy. Go ahead.
My last note on that. Yep. I just wonder if there's any hidden figures as it relates to that.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure there are.
I'm sure there has to be. I wonder what that looks like. I wonder if it's a, you know, like everything else. Is it a team outsourced in India? Is it a team of people in India, like, outsourced all the math to?
Right.
But yeah, I'm sure there are people. And not just Watson.
Right.
You know? So, Elon Musk, who is a guy who is on record talking about his fears of AI and deep AI sort of taking over, like in a Matrix way, he like warns of this. Mm-hmm. He's sort of saying that, like, and it's almost if you can't meet him, join him theory, that like that artificial intelligence and humans, you need to sort of like join forces in order to be able to move forward to the next level. But the way he's saying it is in a way that's more like Westworld-y, like in a humanoid way. When I first read it, I thought it was like, oh, he means like, yeah, we'll have to work with Watson. He's like, no, we'll have to actually merge, he sort of sees, to become these sort of superhumans. Elon Musk, who's a super smart guy, has a lot of crazy science fiction-y theories, but like, he's so smart, it's hard not to listen to him. What do you think of this?
I mean, I don't think this is a theory. I think it's inevitable. I think that we are past the point of no return as it relates to our computational abilities and what computers and artificial intelligence will begin to do. And I think, you know, the theorists and science fiction writers that, you know, kind of like exposed this, you know, decades ago, I think it's really happening. What he's saying, I think, is absolutely correct. Like, I mean, we are already seeing, you know, human biology and computer technology merging, synthesizing. Right. So, I mean, the fact that, you know, it's going to come to a point in time where it gets better and better. And, like, to have a machine that can actually outthink you, like, you want, how do you protect yourself? So what he's suggesting is that the only way to protect yourself is to become part machine.
Oh, so he's already preparing for the war.
Exactly. And I know that, you know, a lot of people are more Luddite in their philosophy and being anti-technological.
Me.
Exactly. But I think it's inevitable. I think, you know, it's the leak in the dam has already, you know, already been plucked, you know. So right. I feel like, you know, it's gonna be a huge break, you know, in the next coming decade or two, you know. We're gonna start to see some real serious advancements in this area of technology.
And let me ask you, how does that manifest itself? Is that like a chip that goes in your brain that sort of helps enhance your brain? Is it all, I mean, I get the whole sort of like artificial limbs and organs and things like that and smart technology. Is it like DC Comics Cyborg from the Justice League?
Absolutely. I mean,
What does it look like?
I definitely think it's exactly that. I think it's giving us, you know, a higher degree of intelligence, you know, being able to have a stronger sense of meta-thinking. Like, humans do good at thinking and analyzing and observing stuff, but computers do a better job of the meta-thinking. Like, for instance, a photograph is a piece of information, but the metadata of that photograph has all the exposure settings, has all the shutter speed. Humans can't process all that immediately, you know? Right. A computer can. So to be able to have that ability, I think that will put you on par with the computer. Right. So not only do you have the emotionality of being human, but now you also have the analytical skills to be able to decipher stuff and be able to juxtapose things just as fast as a computer can.
Right. Wow. That's crazy. Moving on. I mean, Elon, he seems to be on the cutting edge of all this stuff. So Apple finally has bought a facial recognition company called Real Face. Not very original name, but like called Real Face, and you know, making the next move away from the fingerprints to possibly, you know, being able to look at your phone and it works. I mean, this is how my Xbox works right now. Your Xbox too. You walk up and it says hello, you know, Joe, and it recognizes your face. I mean, this facial recognition is not a new technology, but having it in your phone along with other biometrics seems kind of like inevitable. I mean, I guess this isn't crazy news, but we're marching towards the iPhone 10,
right?
You know, which will supposed to change the game. What do you think of this?
I think it's good. As it relates now, like, I'm sure that having to put your fingerprint into the phone requires a engineering feat that, you know, can be minimized or it's pretty much taken out with the facial recognition, because it's just really the camera, you know. And so I think it's more software based, and I think that will maybe help them design a better or faster, cheaper smartphone, iPhone. And right. So I like the fact that, you know, instead of having to put my fingerprint in, it can be able to detect my face. And I think those things are just as uniquely those things are just as unique as a fingerprint. And so I think that would be kind of interesting to be able to, you know, purchase an app with, you know, just, you know, putting your phone up to your face, or buy a buy groceries or pay for a restaurant tab, you know, just by putting your phone up. Yeah. You know, I think that would be kind of cool, you know.
I wonder the difference between, I don't know, like this biometric stuff, like facial recognition versus retina recognition. It seems like the retina stuff is a little more like a fingerprint, and the face is, I guess the face is pretty, depends on how I guess like how intricate they get with the facial recognition. But I would imagine that the facial can be faked more than the retina.
Absolutely. I mean, what happens if you're twins, or what happens if, you know, I mean, you look like your father or whatever. Like how will they be able to delineate who is who? So I get it.
And what aging? Like, you know, you age, you get a beard.
You have to reshoot it.
Like, yeah, you lose weight. You know, so that's
those are good questions.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
Well, I mean, because with your fingerprint doesn't do any of those things. It is what it is, and you only have that fingerprint in the whole world.
Right.
Your face. I mean, people could actually. I mean, we see it all the time in like movies like Mission Impossible and stuff like that, where they actually can put on a face.
Yeah,
you know exactly.
So. I also think about the new iPhone allegedly will have, you know, it'll be all screen with no button, the home button wants to be the screen, so you can touch it anywhere, and it recognizes your fingerprint. That seems like the way to me. But whatever. I mean, Apple seems to. They've acquired them, so they're doing something with it.
Seems like that acquisition was pretty low. There's only two M's for that acquisition. That surprised me that it was so cheap for them to acquire it.
Yeah, maybe they're a failing facial recognition software company.
Maybe.
And maybe Apple just got it for a song, maybe. They say. And maybe it's for something else. Maybe it's for the new Apple television that's coming out.
Hey,
who knows,
maybe.
You know.
Maybe.
Anyway, Uber is again in some more hot water. I mean, Uber was already under fire for Travis Kalanick was already on fire for cozying up to Trump, and people didn't like that. And now, one of his employees, Susan Fowler, like alleged that there was some sexual harassment that went on, and she reported to HR, and HR sort of gave it the. Like, you know, the old, what were you wearing? Like, you know, like, maybe you shouldn't have been wearing that skirt.
Right.
That's caused a big issue. And Travis just tweeted out, basically, what's described here is abhorrent, and I'm against everything we believe in. Anyone who believes that way in this company and thinks this is okay will be fired. Bam. And then he went on to say, we instructed... Our chief of human resources to do an urgent investigation. This cannot be a place for behavior at Uber. Two questions. I mean, obviously, no one agrees with that. But like, you have to. The culture of this has to come from somewhere, right? I mean, every time you see these companies like Fox, whatever, it has to do with the culture. It's weird that a human resource person would allow this to happen. Number one, number two, like Uber, man, PR. They're having a bad PR the year. What do you think of this? How bad would this hurt them?
I mean, I think they are having a bad PR moment, back-to-back moments. But I think it, you know, it's like when you start, well, it's like a domino effect. When one thing happens, another thing happens. And so I think, I mean, as it relates to the issue, I think that a big part of the problem is what we often talk about in terms of Silicon Valley about diversity in these companies, with ethnicity and gender. The fact that, you know, women employees are so low in the chambers of a lot of these companies, like I think a lot of that chauvinistic and male, the male kind of like mindset, like is the culture of the company, and I think that a lot of those things probably become acceptable and become something that women have to deal with, and I think that's where it needs to stop. Like, we need more diversity in the ranks. We need more women represented. We need more people of color represented, and I think that's when you'll start to see more sense of mutuality and respect. And in terms of him taking a stand and saying they'll be fired, I mean, if you really dig into this report and what this woman kind of like was saying in her blog, was that they're not just saying it's her fault, but they're saying, hey, we'll give him a punishment, but they're not giving him a punishment. They're giving him pass after pass after pass after pass. So I think that is the problem. And I think that's really going to do damage to Uber as a company. Like, the fact that, I mean... You're getting a hinge of corruption, you know, and the fact that, hey, as you equated with the Trump thing, hey, we'll pick up drivers from the airport versus taking a stand with the people that are protesting. Well, yeah. I'll be on Trump's advisory board. Well, now that you're disrespecting and demeaning women and you're not doing anything about it to enforce that, that's going to have some major effects on the company.
Yeah, it's going to
be... Delete Uber campaign is still going.
Yeah, know? I mean, you make an excellent point about sort of like what side do you land on these things. I mean, people say all the time, you know, conservatives are, you know, usually always on the wrong side of history. You know, and they say even in this moment right now, what's happening in this Trump moment, when history, right, you know, when you look back at history, what side, what did you do? All these sort of Senate Republicans and House Republicans who are like co-signing with Trump, like history's not going to look well on them when it look back. Like, where were you? Did you you know? And it's the same thing with Uber. Like, where were you when these people were protesting? Where were you when there's opportunities to take a stand?
Right.
Like that, those are things that are gonna stick with them. I believe.
Absolutely. I think it's shameful, bro. In an engineering department of 150 people, they have 5 women that work there.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Well, this is my earlier point. I mean, these things don't come out of thin air. It starts from a culture that, like, it's the same thing at Fox News with the Roger Ailes thing. It's a systemic culture within the company. These things don't just pop up like, we had a flare up. You know, like, no, it's like companies are that way because it's a top down philosophy of who you put in management. How, you know, how these people treat people. And obviously, if you're in human resources and you think this is okay, then that comes from the top down. I don't know. I think that I don't buy the CEO jumping on like, whoa, what's going on in my company? I will fire everyone. Okay, well, it's you set the tone of your company, dude.
Absolutely.
It's your company. So anyway, moving on. Speaking of people who set the tone for the company, your boy is Zuckerberg. Facebook wants to help you find a job. Look, so Facebook has this sort of new initiative, I imagine, that will sort of help users find employers and employers find users, a la
LinkedIn, Monster.com.
LinkedIn, Monster, this is what I'm thinking of. That I can't think of right now. But anyway, yeah, those people. And it's fine. I think that's all. There's nothing wrong with that. The thing about Facebook, as I was reading the story, the thing I realized about Facebook that drives me crazy is I don't believe that Mark Zuckerberg does anything to, like, they do this thing where it's like, we do this for the betterment of the culture and the people. And it's always about the bottom line of Facebook. I mean, it's so transparent to me. I know every company does that. I know. It's like, I know Burger King ain't looking out for me.
Thank you.
When they bring a new Whopper, I know that.
All right.
But what I'm saying is that, like, the idea that, like, you know, we're, I don't know. I think this is being, I guess what I'll say about this is, it's a sham. It's a way, obviously, to get more money from businesses and people in and get more users. Good for them, but don't tell me we're helping you. We're helping the economy and helping jobs and helping create stuff.
I mean, I think they are. I mean, I think that it's a little bit of both. Of course, they want to expand as a company. Of course, they want to make gobs of money. Of course, they want people to stay in their ecosystem. But if they can figure out a way to do all those things and make it easier for people to find jobs, right, and for employers to contact to siphon the best talent, I think that's great. I mean, what's the difference between LinkedIn doing it? What's the difference between a Monster.com or anyone else that's doing it? Or the traditional looking up on Craigslist or whatever, right, you know?
Like, ZipRecruiter is what I'm thinking of. Anyway, go ahead.
I mean, I think it's okay. Like, I feel that, I mean, is that a resource that I will use? Probably not. But I could see it being very useful for people that are maybe looking for a source of employment, or very useful for a company, like I said, trying to, you know, attract the very, or groom the very best talent. I mean, everyone uses Facebook, 1.6 billion users. Like, yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
And we already know Facebook, you know, has a strategy of taking a look at their competitors and, you know, watching them for a while. Okay, Vine, we'll see what you're going to do. Okay, Snapchat, we'll see what you're going to do. Okay, LinkedIn, we saw what you've done. Now we're going to come and do it much better and kill you off. Right. Like, I feel that's great. You don't?
Yeah, it's a fine business. I respect the hustle from a business standpoint. They got to do what they can to sort of win. I just don't appreciate this sort of, like, fake, like, you know, we're doing it for the people attitude. But
so what company has a good balance of that, in your opinion?
Burger King.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Moving forward, YouTube. Oh, I think Google does, but that's a separate thing. YouTube, Google is skipping their 30-second mandatory ads, which I think is a great idea to be able to figure out what they could do. Although, you know, they've shifted them to 20-second ads, which is not bad, but still, it's nothing worse on YouTube than sitting than having to sit through a giant 30-second
but
ad.
Not just that, it's mid-roll too, so it's not like you have to watch the ad before you start the video. Like, yes. You're in the video, you watch it for a few minutes or seconds, and then the ad comes in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, which is horrible. So the fact that they're doing away with this is also or figuring out better ways to make. This is what I'm talking about. You figure out better ways to still make your money and service your advertisers and make money, but also make sure your users have a good experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're making sure their users have a good experience, so they stay there. Yeah. If they're not having a good experience, they will leave. So that's they're not doing it just because we want you to have a good experience.
They're looking out for me. They're looking out for the people.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to the Jetson-style flying car, which is not quite a Jetson-style flying car. It's a damn helicopter. But the P-Val, the P-Val Liberty. I don't know how this works because obviously you have to have a license. What's the FAA, you know, situation with this thing? Would you buy one of these? Like, what's going on with this car?
I mean, the FAA says the current law says that to take off and land, you have to do it on a traditional runway. You can't just be like on the highway, on the freeway, on your residential street. Like, I'm going up.
Yeah, traffic.
I wish you could. That would be fresh. And the fact that it's $500,000, it's kind of steep price point. But I like the fact that it has a prototype. I like the fact that, you know, a design of this exists, and I think it'll only get better and cheaper, and those FAA regulations will, you know, soften, and who knows, maybe when we have maybe you know, a couple years from now, a decade from now, we might be flying our own car.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just so crazy because there's just so much collision risk and there's so much, like, you know, things happening. But I guess, like, because it's so much vector flying, I mean, like, what do you call it, VFF, so line of sight flying only, which is crazy. But I guess what they're saying is, with all this new drone technology out there, you know, the onboard computers make it such that, especially with something like this, which is basically they're sort of saying it's like a giant drone, you know, you can't run into shit because it won't let you do that, right? Like, much like a drone will. So that kind of makes me feel a little better. But, you know, you read these stories. I was just on a plane over the weekend, and it's like, you read these stories of like your boy Harrison Ford, you know, almost getting a mid-air collision. It's these folks that, I mean, the traffic is so, air traffic is so already heavy, right, you know, in these major cities, and then you add drones, you add people flying their own cars. I mean, it scares me.
No, it's definitely scary. But I think, you know, that's where innovation, there's room for innovation. Like, how can we better manage the air? How can we better ensure the safety of aircraft and passengers? Like, I think someone's going to come along with, you know, a really innovative system that will organize, you know, what's happening up there. And so I think it'll give more opportunity for there to be more quantity of air traffic. So,
right. Well, we'll see. We'll keep moving on. There's a company called Gridiron Labs, which has designed this new football helmet that they think may be the football helmet of the future. And I kind of agree. It looks it's dope. It's got, not only is it sort of like, you know, sort of anti, has also to help you with all your concussion protocol and maybe help with some of that stuff, but it's got the full visor with all of the readout stuff. And I wonder if that's, you know, if that's going to be perceived as enhanced, as when it was performance enhancing, if that's going to be seen as cheating, if you can, as a quarterback, could like have all this stuff to see more in the field. Like, you already have the offensive coordinator in your ear. What if you have a visor? You see routes. Brrr, beep, 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 he's open and you're throwing. I mean, is that the future of, you know, is that the future? I mean, what do you think of this stuff?
I don't know if it would be considered cheating if everyone has it.
Right.
However, would it be cheating if someone augmented the technology? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think
Belichick.
We're too far away from from those things, but they're very plausible. In terms of the helmet, as it relates to safety and preventing concussions, and you know, just the overall safety of the athlete, I think that's good. If there's a way that, you know, we could still have the combat aspects of the game and the you know, the aggressiveness of the game, and still be able to protect the players and ensure safety for not only them but their families, I think that's great. Right. And then inserting the technology, I mean, it seems kind of gimmicky. Like, but I mean, it's plausible, like I said.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I think it's good. We'll see, you know, what happens with this a heads up display and what kind of things that they'll be, and how that changes the game. If you have stuff like the play clock, you know, the all this information already in your you know, I can already hear the old guys playing. Like back in my day, I didn't have all that stuff. I was just, you know, but. No, we'll see. First down markers, all this stuff. You know, you'll be able to see, you know, have all that stuff that we see on TV in your headset. That could be helpful, especially a receiver. You know, when your first down is, it's just interesting how that could be. But then again, what if technology fails? My helmet went out. You know,
they'll have a backup one.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Good news for you. Finally, you can get your Snapchat spectacles. Like online, instead of at a vending machine, they're making them available. You can get a hold of them. Yes, you said you tried these, mm-hmm. right? You are.
Oh, okay. That's funny.
You tried these and you're a fan of these.
I didn't say I was a fan of them.
Okay, but you say you get it.
I can see the usefulness of them. Got if you're it. A heavy snap. You know, if you're heavy on the Snapchat, like I get it. Like, you know, you don't have to be so attached to your phone, even though you still have to kind of like do the upload from your phone. But the capture is done, you know, obviously with the eyewear,
right.
with the sunglasses. And I think, you know, they're not. I mean, the design is not terrible. I love the fact that it signals off that you're recording to whoever you're recording, so they don't feel like it's, you know, obtrusive. I mean, yeah, I love it that it captures HD, you know, video and audio. I think, yeah, for the millennial, for the person that's really heavy in Snapchat, it's a right. perfect, it's a perfect tool. Especially if you're using it for your brand, or if you're using it for, you know, economic purposes. Like, I think it's a good tool, just like, you know, an iPad would be, or a camera or whatever. So I don't know if it's going to be a revenue stream for Snapchat. I don't know if it's going to help. Expand their brand identity or awareness to other potential, you know, consumers. But it just seems kind of gimmicky.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand. They can't possibly be making money on these things. They can't possibly be like flying off the shelves. They can't even be an awareness thing of like, wow, Snapchat's everywhere. Maybe there's something down the road coming that I can't see that maybe Snapchat sees.
Maybe.
As they're building that giant studio facility down in Venice, which is like Snapchat University campus.
If they're able to capture VR or like 360 video, then that's something different.
Yeah, definitely. You know? Or like even augmented reality type stuff, mm-hmm. where you're like, you know, you're seeing stuff. You know, I mean, maybe that's it, because Snapchat is, you know, so heavy on the filters. It's all about the filters, the augmented technology. Snapchat's augmented reality technology is, you know, is pretty amazing. So maybe it's something that I can project a mask on you.
Right.
Or, you know, I can project something in front of you. Maybe it's that.
Right.
Maybe that's where it's going. I mean, that probably is where it's going, actually. I don't want to think about it. Okay, cool. So we'll see. I just want to touch on the fact, I just want to check in with our boy Ryan Coogler, who is hard at work on Black Panther. It's still, we've still got a little over under a year before we even see it, you know, but
they just started production like a month ago.
Yeah, there's a an issue article sort of like getting to know who Coogler is and his whole path, and we've been very vocal about, you know, his skills and his skill level and Fruitvale and Creed and all sort of stuff. And I finally saw Fruitvale, by the way. It took me like 3 years, and it's fantastic. And but Black Panther says it'd be his most personal film yet. And, you know, Ava DuVernay was just on The Business. I don't know if you heard that one. Mm-hmm. Talking about how she
passed,
yeah. You know, but thinks that, you know, Coogler will thrive in that environment. I think so, too. What do you think?
I think he'll definitely thrive in the environment. He has the proper sensibilities to be able to pull it off. And I think, you know, having the experience of his two previous features with Fruitvale Station and with Creed, I think it gives him the experience and the knowledge to be able to pull off, you know, this huge, big budgeted film. I mean, he did an indie. He did something that was kind of low budget. Then he did something that had, you know, was a legacy property that he, you know, made highly successful. And now, I mean, to be able to blend those two sensibilities together and have like a very authentic, soulful approach to it, I think it's going to be a home run. Forget that. I think it's going to be a grand slam.
I do too. I can't imagine this not being. I think the character already is great. I think the introduction to the character in Civil War was dope and definitely made us want to see more. Yeah, I'm very excited about it.
And I like what he does. I mean, a lot of these guys do this, but, you know, you stick with what you know. You have your team. You know, his DP, the lady, I forgot her name, but, you know, from film school, he used her.
Yeah.
You know, and he's using her all the way from Fruitvale all the way to this one. And I love the fact that, you know, you kind of have your own, talk about ecosystems with social media and brands, like, but same thing with the process of being creative. Like, you want to go with the people that you have kind of like a shorthand with and you have chemistry with, and and you grow and build that way. And I love the fact that he has loyalty with the people that helped him as well, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, and you were able to grow together,
like, exactly,
which is great. And also, same thing with Ava. Same thing. She talked about how she had to hunker down when she's on those three projects herself. She got her people, like the same editor on Queen Sugar and 13 and Wrinkle Over Time. Same team, same DP. Exactly. All of them working together. I think that's dope. That's something that I definitely know. Well, would like to, you know, employ.
So, do you think that Coogler? What do you anticipate Coogler to do after this? Like, do you think he'll skip back down to more of like a less big budget blockbuster type of film, or more like a Oscar contender, something that's more a narrative driven versus action based?
I think the thing about Coogler right now is he is in a great place because he's kind of caught in this sort of sequel zone right now. He's got two franchises. So because he's got two franchises, he's beholden to make one of those movies every few years. And now he's got two of them. So that's a place that directors find themselves in. So what usually happens, and I think of like a Christopher Nolan and some of these guys who do that. It is coming that one for me, one for them thing. But his next film has to be Creed 2. And then it doesn't have to be, but it should be Creed 2, because the timing will be right. After he finishes this, Creed 2 will be great. Sly is 97, so we got to get that out of the way. But I agree. I think when he gets out of the next movie that he makes that is not a Creed movie and is not a Black Panther movie, I predict he'll be an Oscar winner. I really do. Because I think whatever that movie is going to be, he will have done the two big budget genre movies. And then he's going to do something that is Oscar. And actually, I take it one step further. Coogler's one of those people, like Nolan and like Spielberg, who can make a genre movie and make it Oscar worthy.
That's what I was about to say, too.
Because Creed could be, maybe Creed gets nominated for an Oscar.
I mean, it did.
You know? I mean, Creed 2, I'm saying. Yeah.
I like the fact, when you look at a lot of the more famous Black directors, I think he's setting himself to be the top dog, to be able to have the sophistication to do an Oscar contender and a blockbuster.
Yeah,
I mean, Spike Lee's never done a blockbuster. I mean, if you say
Inside Man,
that's not a blockbuster.
It's not.
Like, I think that's awesome.
Even Malcolm X, but I will say that Inside Man and Malcolm X were big budget studio kind of films.
They're not Marvel movies.
But they're not Marvel movies. Come on. Yes.
Okay. So what I'm saying is, like, yo, like, he's setting himself to be able to be great in both spheres. I think, I don't know of another Black director that's been able to do that.
Right.
I think that's awesome.
Ava's about to do it with Wrinkle in Time. That's a big budget, 100 million plus.
Hey, that's true.
Disney movie.
That's true.
That's a beloved book. That's a huge property. That's going to be if Disney has it their way, that'll be a massive movie. So,
that's true.
And then she can turn around and make, again, the fact that she can make a TV show on the own network,
a documentary
on Netflix, and then a giant, crazy, big budget, you know, Disney movie.
That's dope.
Yeah, she's the other one. I think that she's
Went to film school.
I'm a true believer in Ava's abilities at this point.
Yeah.
So
she's dope.
She definitely is. Moving on, the Switch. People are like, I've yet to even try the Switch. I'm just gonna be honest, but this article, like, it, will the Switch overtake the Xbox One as a console of choice? Like, I don't know how that's possible. Have you checked out the Switch?
I mean, I've checked it out just, you know, editorially. I haven't, you know, put my hands on it. I haven't seen it. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not sold. I feel like it's just cheesy. I think it's gimmicky. Maybe it's not for me, my age, my demographic. Maybe it's for a different type of gamer or a younger consumer.
Yep.
But I'm not with it. Like, I don't feel it.
Yep. I agree. I have no. I mean, I'm the wrong guy because I've never been a Nintendo guy, so it's not. You know, that's never been my thing. But I feel like it is sort of millennial driven, and so maybe some folks. There are some Super Nintendo loyalists out there, and also we're talking about Nintendo as a brand that is not that Sony and Microsoft aren't, but Nintendo is definitely an international brand. So we'll see. We'll see how well it does. Last thing we'll say is a couple more things. Cool Star Wars notes. John Williams is back, hard at work, working on The Last Jedi. Like, he's doing his thing. I mean, this will be his, he's 85, so this will be his, I don't know, eighth Star Wars movie, because there's eight of them. This will be his eighth Star Wars movie. I mean, this is great. I mean, I don't know. I'm a big John Williams fan. The fact that he's still doing it at 85 is cool.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, he's a big part of what makes Star Wars iconic, the music, the soundtrack, the score. I like that, you know, it's just interesting how they're approaching the film, because a lot of times, you know, editors, feature film editors will edit without any music, or they'll put in temp score, temp music. Right. But they're saying with this approach, with this movie, he's going to create the score and have the editors kind of respond to that, versus, you know, usually, you know, the score is one of the last things that's done. Like, now they're moving this up in the workflow, so kind of like making him create, you know, some cinematic, you know, sound pieces, and then having the editors work with that. It's just a different approach, like a workflow that I think is not normally seen in movie making. So
right. I agree. I'm sure that he'll make it throughout the rest of them. And I also like that, like, he didn't They kept him to the Star Wars only stuff, like, mm-hmm. you know, the guys who did Rogue One, mm-hmm. Very Williams esque, you know, theme, but not the real Star Wars theme. I'm sure they'll do the same thing with the Han Solo movie, which, by the way, they just released a photo, they tweeted out a photo that Star Wars did, Disney did, they all tweeted it out, of the cast and director Christopher Miller of the new Han Solo movie, the yet untitled Han Solo movie, with the gang all there. You know, it's got Alden Emmerich and Donald Glover playing Lando, Emilia Clarke, who as Khaleesi from Game of Thrones seems to be in every blockbuster now. She was in Terminator. She's like, you know, doing it outside of Game of Thrones. She's in it. Woody Harrelson's in it. I don't know what Woody Harrelson's doing in. You know, it's yeah, and Christopher Lord and Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who I think I'm a big fan of. We're big fans of, because from Son of Zorn and the Lego Movie and Last Man on Earth and some other big one they're doing, the time travel one,
Making History.
It's coming. Lord Miller, I think, are incredible. The fact that they're doing this movie, I have super high hopes for it.
I mean, I mean, we talk about. Just expansion and just, you know, what they're able to touch in both the TV world and film world. I mean, the fact that they're a duo, I think it's awesome they're able to do that. And, you know, they have a voice. I hope they get it right, you know?
Yep, I agree. That's all I got. That's it for today. Anything else you want to add, talk about?
What do you think about Magic being president of the operations of Lakers basketball?
I'm happy with it. There's all these conflicting views on it and conflicting reports on it about, like, Magic, because last time he was there, he came as coach and it was this, that, and the other. You know, people making jokes like, hoping he's better at this than he is at a TV show. Like, Magic, I don't know. There's some people think that, like, these guys like Phil and Magic are so far removed from what it takes of the day-to-day grind of basketball as an operations guy, with all the advanced metrics and the scouts and scouting people in Italy and all the stuff that these guys have to do on a regular basis. that you can't just breeze in and talk and do it. But I believe, as Magic says, part of it is just putting all the right people in place, and then you use your thing, you use your top down, you know, sort of ability to make it work. I'm happy about this.
I'm happy about it too. I think Magic has a great brand. He's respected within the basketball world, within the business world, and he has good entrepreneurial, you know, mindset. So I think that he's done a you know, phenomenal job with both the Sparks and the Dodgers. Like, I mean, he has the breadth of experience, he has the team, the infrastructure, and like I said, he has the basketball acumen and the relationships to be able to pull in the proper talent and resources to make the organization successful. I think it's dope that, you know, player now becomes president. I love stories like that. And he's been wanting to be up at that level with the Lakers for a long time, so it's good.
And I want to ask, I wasn't able to read the story, but obviously, is he still a part of the Dodgers organization?
I don't know if that's current.
Okay, because I know that he's ownership group of right, Dodgers, group. So it wasn't like he wasn't in, like, down there, like, making decisions.
Well, he was a big part of it.
He could still be part owner and still be president of it. You can have two jobs in L.A.
Why not?
You know? I really love that Magic, a guy who sort of came from Michigan and became sort of like the face of Los Angeles all through the entire 80s. You know, a guy in 79 was a face of Los Angeles through the entire 80s, really, basically, all into the early 90s. He's now... I mean, this dude could be the mayor. He could be the mayor of Los Angeles. He could be the governor, but, you know, of California. The fact that he's now involved in the Sparks, the Lakers, and the Dodgers, I think it's great.
Yeah, and not just that.
Starbucks and Fat Burgers and Fridays and all this stuff. So
my last one, real quick. Yeah. I don't know if you caught the article this week about Jay-Z starting a venture capitalist fund.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I mean.
Tell me.
Hove is doing what Nas has been doing, and he wants to become a VC where he, you know, does, you know, series one of investing for, you know, tech companies, and so I think he already has an investment in Uber, but yeah, I mean, that's something that they announced this week that he's going to be doing, you know, more adamantly and more just more visibly. So all of you, you know, potential startups or whoever has an idea, Hove might acquire you.
Give me some money, Hove, please. Right. that's fair. And as we talked about, like, Nas has been in the game for a long time, kind of on the low, like, just is diversified in multiple companies. So, you know, so I guess he's the Nas Jay-Z battles Ether is sort of reignited. Anyway, all right, cool. I think that's it. The Jordan Peele movie Get Out is getting crazy reviews. 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's getting crazy reviews, and I thought that because it was released in February, that the studio might be trying to, like, maybe not be good. But the truth of the matter is, sometimes the studios put stuff in February where they don't know what else to do with it. And they didn't know what to do with it. They put it in February, and it's a horror movie, Jordan Peele. It's got some deep, deep, deep racial subtext in it. It's supposed to be great. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it, too. I mean, the trailer looks hilarious.
Yeah, it does. especially with my man from Atlanta. Exactly. Doing the handshake. With the handshake. Right. Now. All right, thank you. Where can the people find you, sir?
Find me on Instagram and Twitter, at Akili Shine, AKIOISHINE.
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, at Joe K. Braswell. We will see you next week with hopefully some Oscar good news, and we'll go from there. Thanks, bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming, at King XO Bay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.